So let's come again and think about this story that we read earlier, this story about Jesus restoring sight. And one of the things that we find when we look at the life of Jesus as recorded in the Gospels is the things he did that demonstrated his power, things that were beyond normal human ability. And there are many things we learn from these miracles, that's what we call them, things that we can't understand by scientific reasoning and understanding. Whether they demonstrate the power of Jesus over nature, his ability to provide for those in need, the way he was able to cast out evil spirits from those who were oppressed, the way he was able even to restore people to life, and the way he healed those who were sick. Many examples of these things in the accounts of the life of Jesus. And this, along with his character, his words, his teaching, would have drawn people to him, the large crowds we were thinking about earlier, as it demonstrated to them that here was someone who was very special, someone to engage with, someone to seek to understand, somebody to trust in, somebody to hope in. And one specific thing we see Jesus doing on a number of occasions and in different ways is restoring sight to those who couldn't see. It's not just in this story. We find it time and time again. You've probably noticed that I wear glasses. I've worn them for a long time. I think from about age of 7 or 8, when I sort of had a conversation with my parents and said, why, when teachers write things on a board in a classroom, can't I see what they're writing? And they realised that something was wrong. And I know that if I try and do things without my glasses, I struggle in so many ways. Things are blurred, things are out of focus. I become a danger to me and to other people more than normal. It would impact my ability to do virtually everything I do. And as we were singing one of those songs earlier, I did a quick count up. And I think there are 30 people in this room this morning who are wearing glasses. That's a lot of people. And I know some do, some have contact lenses and so on. Many of us benefit from the advances of science to enable us to function. And if we didn't have that, some of us would be impacted more than others. But as Sue was reminding us, that's a long way from being blind. And we were encouraged to experience that by shutting our eyes just for a moment, of not being able to see anything, not being able to recognise the faces of those important to you, not being able to walk without fear of hurting yourself or getting lost, of not being able to work, of being dependent on others. I'm amazed at all the things that blind people have worked out how to do to live more independent lives. Memorising the layout of their homes, using guide dogs, or what we call them now, assistance dogs, engaging in sports, and so on. But I expect that even with all those abilities, if they came across an opportunity to have their sight restored, they'd go for it with real desire and excitement. Now, in the time of Jesus, without all the things that we've developed to help the blind, without a social structure to fall back on, without disability benefits, blind people would have been totally dependent on family and friends and would have often needed to beg to get money for what they needed to live on. A difficult, a demoralising, a degrading existence, and one that Jesus engaged with powerfully on multiple occasions. And there's two different ways in which we hear about Jesus healing blind people. Sometimes they're just included in a list of people who were brought to Jesus for healing. So, for example, in Matthew 15, there's great crowds. They come to him, but they bring the lame and the blind and the crippled and the mute and many others and laid them at his feet, and he healed them. So lots and lots of people with lots and lots of problems, they come to Jesus and he heals them sort of en masse. But there are some occasions where we see Jesus engaging with individuals, like in our story today. And I think there we're trying to is trying to tell us something more significant about what was going on in the lives of these people. And in Matthew's Gospel, which is the where we read the story from this morning, there are three accounts of this type. In chapter 12, there's someone who is under the influence of an evil spirit, who was blind and unable to speak, and Jesus casts out this evil spirit, and the man is able to see and to speak. And there's two separate occasions recorded where Jesus comes across two blind men who call out for mercy, and he heals them, one in Matthew 9 and one in our passage this morning. And as Sue pointed out, there are three groups who are actively involved in this story: the crowd, the blind men, and Jesus. But what she also spotted, and what Joseph was able to tell us, is that there was another group of people present, the disciples. And they don't feature in the story apart from just being there. They don't say anything. They don't do anything. They're not referred to apart from Jesus and his disciples were leaving Jericho. That's the last time the disciples get a mention. So I thought what we'd do this morning is try and look at the story from their perspectives. Imagine you were one of those disciples, one of those people who were close to Jesus, and you were looking at these engagements between the crowd, the blind men, and Jesus. What would you have seen? What would you have heard? What would it have made you think? How might it have challenged you? And maybe as we think about their experience, it will ask us some questions for ourselves as to how we seek to follow Jesus today, as to how we seek to be a disciple of Jesus in our own time and in our own situation. So, this crowd. You know, these people, the disciples, had been following Jesus. They'd been close to him for some years. They'd been called by Jesus. They'd given up a lot to follow him. They had the privilege of seeing at close quarters the amazing things that Jesus did, hearing the powerful words that he spoke. They were aware of their privilege of being part of the inner circle. But they would also have been used to the fact that large crowds were interested in Jesus and followed him as well. Maybe not as consistently. Maybe sometimes it was a crowd of people from this set of villages, and then a different set of people made up another crowd on another day. They'd have been aware of these crowds thronging around Jesus because of the way he was able to heal people, because of his teaching. They even followed him when he was trying to have a break and have some time to himself. I wonder what the disciples thought about these crowds of people who followed Jesus. On one hand, it was probably quite exciting. It showed that what Jesus was doing was attracting attention. Maybe the movement they thought he was starting was gaining a bit of momentum. It was going somewhere. It meant they were part of something significant. But there are also occasions when having the crowd around got a bit much. And they encouraged Jesus to send them away. Or, we don't know what to do with them. How are we supposed to feed this group of people? They were a burden, a responsibility. And maybe a bit of resentment. These crowds weren't as committed to Jesus as they were. They just turn up for a bit and then they go back home. They hadn't given up as much to follow Jesus as these disciples had. But at times, look, just we need some peace and quiet. So they may well have had mixed feelings towards this crowd who followed Jesus as he was leaving Jericho that morning on the road to Jerusalem. And suddenly, they become aware of a disturbance. The people in the crowd are turning on two men sitting on the side of the road, men who they discover were blind, and calling out to Jesus. The crowds are trying to make them be quiet so they don't disturb what is going on. They don't interfere with the program. And on the face of it, this seems strange. as on many occasions, the crowd seemed to be following Jesus because of his power to heal, and you'd have thought they'd welcome another opportunity to see Jesus restoring sight to the blind. It's an amazing thing to witness. But on this occasion, the crowd didn't want it. They were spending time with Jesus. They didn't want anything to interfere with that. And as the disciples looked at the crowd and saw how they were behaving and trying to stop these men getting involved in what was happening, I wonder if they remembered the occasion when parents had brought children to Jesus for him to bless them, and they had tried to get in the way. They tried to stop them getting to Jesus, and Jesus had to tell them to allow those children through. On that occasion, they seemed to be trying to protect Jesus from having to spend time with people they thought were insignificant. And they had to learn that Jesus was there for everyone. And as they became aware of the crowd trying to stop these blind men gaining the attention of Jesus, I wonder what they were thinking. Were they silently approving of what the crowd was doing? They were involved in important work. They were going to Jerusalem. They didn't want to be sidetracked. But were they angry at what the crowd was doing, having learnt the lesson that Jesus was there for everyone? We don't know. But what we do know is they didn't do anything. The disciples stayed silent. They didn't get involved. Wouldn't it have been wonderful if the story wasn't as we have it, but it had been changed slightly? That when the crowd started to try to stop these blind men coming to Jesus, a couple of the disciples had gone up to Jesus and said, "This is what's happening. There are these men who need your help." Maybe two or three more had gone over to these blind men and helped them get up and come and walk and stand with Jesus, with the hope and expectation that he would be able to heal them. Wouldn't it have been great if that's how the story had been written? These disciples had seen the need, had communicated the need to Jesus, and they'd introduced these people to Jesus. Hopefully we don't act as the crowd did, being too focused on spending time with Jesus ourselves and getting in the way of others who want to. But are we prepared to go beyond what the disciples didn't do? Are we prepared to look out for those people who are in need and to seek them, to seek to introduce them to Jesus? So that's a question I think that the crowd encourages us to think. Now, how about the blind men and what the disciples thought of them? From their privileged position of being close to Jesus, the disciples would have been able to see and hear everything that went on. They would have heard how the blind men referred to Jesus as Lord, as Son of David. In doing so, these two men were recognising the authority of Jesus and stating they believed he was the one God had promised to send, the one they and all of Israel had been waiting for. And they would have heard these men asking Jesus to have mercy on them, to have pity on them. And they may well have wondered why these men had these ideas about the identity of Jesus and why they thought he could help. News of Jesus must have travelled. Accounts of his healing would have been spoken about. Maybe these men have heard of the other occasions when Jesus had even been able to restore sight to the blind. If them, why not us? They would have been thinking. And maybe as they heard those words the blind men shouted to get the attention of Jesus, as they heard the simple request for Jesus to restore their sight, they would have been challenged about their attitudes toward Jesus. They'd travelled with him for a few years. They'd spent time with him. They'd shared a meal together. They'd seen Jesus tired, in need of a break. They'd seen him asleep. Maybe they'd lost some of the realisation of the uniqueness and significance of Jesus. Maybe they'd forgotten their need of his help and blessing in their lives. Maybe they thought they'd made it. And the attitude, the words of these blind men would have reminded them all over again of their need for Jesus. Is that something we need to be reminded of this morning? However long we've been on this journey with him, reminded of the supremacy and authority of Jesus, that he is Lord. What does that mean to us this morning? Reminded of the fact that we continue to need his mercy, his forgiveness, his blessing, and that we can only find that in him. Was this encounter with these blind men a necessary wake-up call for the disciples? Do we need to experience something similar this morning? Have we grown so used to Jesus that we've forgotten the reality of who he is and our total dependence on him? Have we become so used to being on the inside that we forget our need for mercy and forgiveness? And then there's Jesus. As the disciples observed Jesus, they'd have seen once again how he was in total control of the situation, that he chooses to focus on what's important to him and not be swayed by those around him. The large crowd following him were on his side. For a moment, they were part of his team. Some of them may well have been travelling with him to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover, although, as we recognise, the significance for him would have been much greater than for them. Some of them may have formed the large crowd that greeted him as he rode into Jerusalem on a donkey. We'll be thinking about that story next week. And it would have been easy to go along with the crowd, to ignore these two men sitting on the side of the road, for Jesus to simply continue his journey to Jerusalem. But the question of what does the crowd think doesn't seem to figure at all in what Jesus does. He hears these men. He would have been aware of the hushing of the crowd. But he stops and he calls out to them. And while it isn't explicitly spelled out, the crowd would have stopped as well. Some at the front, maybe not aware of what was happening, would have continued for a bit until they found themselves disconnected and would have got a bit embarrassed and would have either had to wait for them to catch up or to go back to see what was happening. Jesus is in the centre and his actions dictate the actions of the crowds. And the fact that they were trying to stop these blind men is suddenly irrelevant because Jesus has chosen to engage with them. And as Sue pointed out, the way in which Jesus engages with these men is wonderful. It's considerate. He doesn't presume what they want, but he asks them what they want. He doesn't try to give them something they're not looking for. But when he hears what they want, he recognises their need, he comes alongside them, he touches their eyes, and they can see, and they become part of the crowd and follow him. And as the journey to Jerusalem starts up again, after another demonstration of the mercy and power of Jesus, the disciples would have had something more to think about. They would have seen again that it is the agenda of Jesus that is important. Not the crowd, not themselves, but what he chooses to do. They would have seen that Jesus was interruptible. He was on the way to Jerusalem, where he would die on the cross to deal with the problem of sin, to restore the world into relationship with God. That was the reason he'd come to earth. That was what he was focusing on. That was the big picture of what was just about to happen. But even with that supremely important task ahead of him, he has time to stop, to engage sensitively and respectfully with two men, and to change their lives. They would have seen how Jesus engaged with these men by understanding where they were at, by meeting them in that place, and then changing their lives. What challenge would they have taken away from that encounter? The importance of knowing what Jesus is about, understanding his agenda, aligning themselves with it. The need to be prepared for interruptions to happen in our planned agenda, which is often so important to us, but to allow interruptions to take place so that we can bless others. And the importance of treating people with respect and finding out what they are looking for, as opposed to starting with our own ideas of what they are seeking and what they need. challenges are we going to take away from this story? A story which many of us will know well. But as we think about what the disciples would have seen as they observed the crowd, as they observed these blind men, as they observed Jesus, and the questions that might have brought into their minds and raised in their thinking, what challenges are we going to take away? Do we need to be reminded of the lordship of Jesus? Do we need to be reminded of our dependence on him? Do we need to be reminded of the importance of his agenda and making sure we're part of that? Do we need to be reminded of the need to allow ourselves to be interrupted from what we are planning so that we can bless others? If the disciples had been able to observe our actions this last week, would they have seen people behaving like the crowd? Would they have seen people behaving like these blind men? Would they have seen people behaving like Jesus? If the disciples were able to observe our actions in the week ahead, what would they see then? Let's pray.